Hello, and welcome back to Parent is a Verb on OUradio.org. Hi, I'm Barry Holzer.
And I'm Hani Holzer.
Today, we're here to talk to you about appreciating and understanding anxiety in your children. Anxiety is really a normal part of childhood. You know, very often adults don't think that children ever get anxious or sad, but the truth is they have all these emotions frequently on a daily basis. But, you know, even happy children get anxious, and it's a normal part of life.
It's a normal part of childhood, actually, because when you think about what, a lot of what anxiety is, it's the unknown. In some cases, in many cases, and there are so many firsts in childhood. It's the first day of school, the first sleepover, the first soccer game, lots and lots of firsts. There are a lot of things to anticipate.
Right. And anticipating these things that a child hasn't done before creates a sense of anxiety. But this type of anxiety, as long as it doesn't hinder the child from doing the activity, really lends importance to the event. It makes it feel more important. It makes it more special. They remember it more because not only the enjoyment they had about it, but about worrying about these little things.
And anticipating the event. I mean, half the fun is getting there, that's what they say. So half the fun is anticipating what is going to happen. What's it going to be like? What's my teacher going to look like? What's the classroom going to look like? What are the other kids going to be wearing? Who's going to, you know, kick the first ball in the game today? Will it be me? Will it be my friend? What, you know, position am I going to play on the team? All of those are very normative, good, anxious.
These are the anxieties that enliven childhood as opposed to create problems for it. Think about riding a roller coaster. Half the fun, or most of the fun of a roller coaster, is not knowing what's coming up next. You know, in Space Mountain and Disney World, you're in the dark and you don't know which way you're going to go, flying or dropping.
Providing you like being flown and dropped, it's really a lot of fun.
So that type of anxiety is normal and relatively healthy. Okay? Children learn to worry well, right? They use it productively, right? And being exposed to this anxiety and learning to manage it teaches them that they can handle anxiety and they can learn to live and manage their anxiety well.
Well, I think that's key, is that, you know, is about anxiety, is learning to manage it well. It's not like everyone is born innately with knowing how to manage anxiety and not be overwhelmed by it. So there are skills in learning how to manage anxiety. And I think, you know, very often when parents join with their children around the anxious event, the anticipated event, it can be very, very helpful, because the first rule in worrying is never worry alone. So if parents are with the child, not worrying, but talking about the event, anticipating it together, it can diminish the anxiety level dramatically.
Yes, I think that parents' role, first and foremost, is, as you said, to really talk about the anxiety with the child, help them manage it, hold their hand, you know, if necessarily through it. You know, if they're nervous before the first day of school, sit with them when they go to sleep, you know, and just support them managing and dealing with the anxiety, as opposed to trying to protect them from it. Too often, parents take the approach of, you know, I don't want them to do this or have to go through this. If they don't want to, you know, play soccer, they don't have to. If they don't want to do this, you know, they can stay home. And that really gives them the message that you can handle the anxiety, and creates more anxiety, not less.
Right, because if you can't even talk about it, or you don't have to go to that event because you're feeling worried about it, oh, there must be something really bad, and I have a right to be this worried, and it kind of grows the worry as opposed to making it smaller and more manageable. And just talking about all of the pieces of what that event is going to look like, talking about all of the concerns out loud together as a team, in partnership, is extremely helpful. And it shows the child that, oh, yes, I, so, okay, the children, you know, will be wearing all kinds of clothing, and the classroom, the first grade classroom may look different than the kindergarten classroom, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So we've talked about some of the normal anxieties. The other normal anxieties that aren't necessarily as happy, the children often have fear of the dark. They're afraid of robbers, of thieves coming to the house. They're afraid of thunder and lightning. You know, they're afraid of bad people. They're afraid of certain animals or bugs and so forth. Those are also normal anxieties that children generally have to deal with.
So how do you deal with it when children do bring up, quote, the normative worries like the robbers and the thieves?
Well, in other words, if your child is, let's say, afraid to go to sleep because, you know, they're afraid of robbers coming, okay? So you say, okay, look, you know, we lock the door or we put on the alarm or whatever it is, and, you know, you use some reality talking, mm-hmm. okay? You calm them down, and you sit with them maybe a little bit and help them go to sleep, and you let them stay in their bed and go to sleep.
So what you're saying is to kind of bring in logic to the equation.
You can bring in some reality into the equation, mm-hmm. you know? We'll talk more, I think, next time about, you know, in dealing with significant anxiety, but how to really help your child through it. But most children, when they have this type of anxiety, it's pretty normal. And if you just sort of sit with them and tell them it's all right, they'll usually be pretty okay. It's not going to be that difficult for them. If it gets so bad that they're, you know, afraid to go to sleep and they're up till midnight, or they're afraid to go outside and so forth, well, then you're dealing with a more serious situation already.
Okay, so this is all normative. We're talking about normal fears, normal worries.
Right. It gets bad, and so the normal anxieties are really okay. The bad anxiety is the anxiety that really gets in the way. So that's what we were just talking about. For example, if I'm a child so afraid that something bad is going to happen to my mom when I'm away, and therefore they're afraid to go to school, that we call separation anxiety. Okay, and they don't want to go out alone. They don't want to go to school. Whatever it is, they're avoiding. Or if they have this overwhelming fear that they're going to be humiliated when they're, you know, with their friends, and so they're afraid to talk, or they're afraid to be with other kids.
They're basically afraid of people.
Right. So that type of social anxiety, these anxieties get in the way of normal development. These are significant anxieties. So children may just worry a lot. They may worry about the feel of failure and so forth.
But it sounds like the differentiation is really the bad anxieties. It gets in the way of them being able to be children and to function as children.
Correct. I think that's an important differentiation to make. I think what we want to talk about today is really how we help our children deal with normal anxiety and understand anxiety better, so we can, in a sense, inoculate our children so that we hopefully can avoid some of the more severe anxieties. I think the first question is, you know, like, where does worry come from?
We're Jewish, right?
Well, clearly, I think worry is universal. We're wired to worry.
And that's a good thing, because otherwise we really wouldn't be able to anticipate danger, which is why we're wired to observe and maybe be a little vigilant sometimes. And then we know to move if something dangerous is about to happen.
Right.
We know to get out of the way.
Right. So that, you know, part of our wiring is to have this alarm system. And when the alarm system works well, okay, it warns us of danger, you know, when you're in the, you know, when we were out in the wilds, you know, if you heard the rustling and the, you know, when you saw a wild animal coming, you know, that you were vigilant, you know, your adrenaline got flowing and you were able to run and so forth.
Otherwise known as the fight or flight response.
Right. But, you know, even now, if I have a test, you know, next week, and I'm nervous about doing well on the test,
chances are you might buckle down and study a little bit, and that would be a good thing.
Right. And if without that anxiety about it, I just ignore it, and I wouldn't do nearly as well. So some anxiety is really very helpful in pushing us and motivating us. When I know I have to get this in, and I have a deadline, and things have to get done, I'm much more likely to go and do and accomplish.
Okay. So worry really is created, the good worry is created as a self-protective mechanism, and is really, if we didn't have it, we'd be in danger.
Right. Now, worry comes from a number of factors. There are biological or genetic factors, right? Everybody's wired differently. Some kids are natural worriers. They just do it really well. And some kids are just naturally wired to be more happy-go-lucky. And most people are somewhere in between. Okay. So, you know, I think we'll talk next time maybe more about kids with more significant, severe types of anxiety. But, you know, what I talked about today is the psychological and the social factors of anxiety. Now, when we say psychological, right, we're talking about how we interpret our experiences, right? Whenever, you know, you can have two people go through the same thing, you know, two kids are in the car and there's a car crash, gosh, Shalom, right? And one kid can be afraid of going to a car again, and they're afraid every time the parents go in the car, and they get very anxious. And one kid just goes right back into the car next day, and they have don't seem to be symptomatic at all.
How do you explain that, then?
Well, everybody is different. How we interpret our experiences makes a huge difference in terms of how the impact is going to have on us. So that's one part.
Well, why do some kids walk away, and they get in the car the next day, and some kids develop that extreme fear around getting back into the car?
Well, a lot of it has to do with how they interpret the anxiety in the first place, how they interpret the event that created the anxiety, and how much they hold on to anxiety. So some of it is their natural, response to anxiety, and some of it is their learned ability to manage their anxiety. The better we can manage our anxiety, the better we can sort of talk ourselves down, okay, and keep ourselves calm, the more we can resilient we're going to be when faced with stressors. Because there's the whole social aspect of what we're exposed to. Okay, what's stressors? And sometimes there's things that are unavoidable, like accidents, and sometimes there are things that parents really have a big role in. We want to be able to do, as parents, we want to help our children with their anxiety in both levels. Being able to help them with the psychological factors of how do I deal with this when it happened.
And that's really, like, I guess, you know, for a kid who's a little bit more prone to more anxiety, that would be giving them skills.
Right.
Skills to talk themselves down off the top of the tree.
Right.
To lower branches. And, you know, what they're exposed to is, when they're exposed to different things, working with them.
Right. So that includes really giving them sort of what we often talk about is cognitive skills, being able to talk, to use their thinking powers to say, okay, yes, I know you were in a car crash, but car crashes are not common things, right? Just because it happened today doesn't mean it's going to happen again anytime soon.
As a matter of fact, it's very highly unlikely that it will happen again anytime soon.
Right. And, you know, being able to teach them how to manage and stay calm and feel okay and, you know, get back in the car and so forth. And this applies, of course, to any type of stress that they might go through. They might have had a unfortunate incident with their friends, right? And now they feel embarrassed and they don't want to go to school tomorrow. So being able to really help our kids and talk them down is important. The other side is just as important. You know, what we expose our children to and how we can, give them the appropriate exposure and to inoculate them from the excessive anxiety.
Right. I think that, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind in terms of exposure, it almost feels like the opposite of overprotecting people and not exposing them to events that could help them grow as people and manage and teach them that they can manage in the world and they don't have to be frightened of things because they have the ability to move through them relatively comfortably and successfully.
Right. So we're talking about normal events that kids might want to avoid that you sort of sometimes push your kid to go and to do. Like a lot of kids are afraid to learn to ride a two-wheeler.
Right.
Right. And we encourage and we nudge them or we push them because, yes, this is creates anxiety, but it's also experience we don't want them to miss.
And the more successful they could feel around all of these, I'd say, normative child events like learning how to ride a bicycle, ultimately the better they'll feel about them. They'll have a real success bank that they can always count on. They can look back on their success. And that tool also helps them manage anxiety and allows them to move forward in challenges.
Right. So on the one hand, as parents, I think what we want to avoid is overprotecting. But on the other hand, especially in our society today, where children are so easily exposed to so many images everywhere, that are really overwhelming for children.
It's true. We have so much coming at us in a visual way alone. I was harking back and think to 9/11 when those buildings fell thousands upon thousands of times on every station over and over again. And there were people who were totally stuck and mesmerized by watching those buildings collapse. That was overexposure to a very traumatic event.
Right. And children and even some adults who watched that, especially if they watched it repeatedly, really ended up with significant, post-traumatic stress, symptoms because of that exposure. But there's so much exposure just on the internet. Even the video games are often very violent. The television, definitely the movies, often have excessive amounts of violence or sexuality or the things that are really unnecessary for our kids to be exposed to on a regular basis.
Unnecessary and really very avoidable.
Mm-hmm.
It's about making, conscious choices of like knowing what's out there, knowing what's enhancing and knowing what's not going to be enhancing. And I think the overexposure to lots of blood and gore images, violent images really is unnecessary and we can avoid it.
Right. And I know in my own practice, I've seen people who've come in and I tell them, you're watching too much TV. Because they have, the anxiety has gone to areas about, fears about criminals and so forth that, I don't match reality, but certainly match what they're watching on the television.
Right. Well, it's also, I think, with all of those shows that are so reality-based, that convince you that this is really normative, everyday occurrences, well, that lends you to believe that, this could happen in my life, too.
Right.
So the media and that type of show, those types of images, they're very convincing.
Yes.
Especially to a young person.
Right. Well, what else, as parents, can we do just in the day in, day out that's going to help our children be less anxious overall?
I think, the short answer to that question is the whole sense of connection and developing a connection with our children and helping them feel loved, and to know that the parent is in charge and they're not in charge. All of those are very, very important inoculators to help children feel safe and to feel less worried.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the sense of security that children get when they feel connected. I often see, children who are in situations where, they feel either the parents are, they don't feel the parents are in charge. The parents don't really parent actively. They don't set limits. That can actually create anxiety for children because they lack a sense of security. Children want to know that somebody's setting limits and taking care of them. But they also, when they feel really connected and they have a good connection with their parents, they feel loved, that gives them a real sense of security.
Right, and there really is no shortcut to feeling connected. You've got to be there to feel connected. You've got to be in connection to be connected. You have to be present. And there really are no shortcuts to that. And you can't have any quality time without some quantity.
So you got to spend the time. You have to have the rules and the structure, but you also just have to have the experiences and have the fun together and doing things together. You have to, you know, you can't just talk about it. You have to really do it and spend the time. And when children feel very connected and they feel that their family structure is secure, they do well. That's why children of divorce has been shown have higher levels of anxiety, because they recognize this rift in the structure of their family.
Well, they're also showing that in, you know, studies around addiction to technologies. Entire families in our culture are all addicted to their technology, so much so that mom's in her computer in one room, dad's on his computer in another room, daughter's in her room on a computer texting on her phone and, you know, working on the computer simultaneously, and little brother is playing his video games and texting his friends on the phone simultaneously, and nobody in the family actually ever really has time to connect with each other. So people are all very addicted to their technology, and they're not connecting and not feeling close and safe, feeling isolated.
To continue on with this whole idea of how we as in our parenting can make a difference, I think the other side is not to be overly harsh, because when we're too demanding and we make the child feel overly responsible, then the child becomes afraid of disappointing the parents. And then they don't have room to try and fail, right? They worry about, you know, doing everything right so that they don't disappoint the parents.
But, okay, I hear what you're saying, but what about having some expectations of your child?
It's a balance of you. Clearly, you want to have expectations. But so if I have a child who should be a 90 student and they're getting 80s, then I can tell them, you could do better, right? And if the message there is that I know you're capable of doing better, okay? But the message really should be that they can do better and they should do it for themselves.
So it's approach and appropriate goals for the particular child.
Right. Okay? It's not that, you know, what type of lazy bum are you?
Right. Oh, that's an approach I've heard, certainly. I'm not sure it's the one that always works well.
Right. So it's you want to know the child. You can let the child know that you're disappointed in their effort, but not that you're necessarily disappointed in them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're disappointed in what they've done. Okay. But that doesn't affect your connection to them.
Right. But to have no expectations of your child, because it might make them a little anxious.
Is the flip side. We talked about overprotecting. We
right.
want to have expectations that are reasonable, that are appropriate for each child. If you have appropriate expectations, then you can ask them, well, what happened on this test? Why do you, and they'll tell you. And, you know, if they mess up occasionally, it's not the end of the world. And you have to let them know that, because failure is a part of success.
Oh, I think that's a really important piece, that failure is part of success.
The idea that you're only going to succeed and you're never allowed to fail impedes children, because then once they fail, they feel it's over. I'm no good anymore. And no matter what I do, I can never make it better. And that's not reality. And that's not what you want them to learn.
Right. Failure is really part of success. That should be like a poster in every classroom in America.
So, you know, we're not encouraging failure, but we recognize that occasionally kids will mess up and then they've got to brush themselves off and move on. The difference between, and even in business, if you read any books about business, the difference between the people who succeed and fail in business is the ones who are willing to accept and move on from their failures and go forward. And the ones who get stuck on their failures and are too afraid to try again, well, they never get the chance to succeed. But most of the people who succeed, it's because they failed a few times, they've learned from it, and they're willing to try and try again.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely crazy. I think, you know, another piece to helping prevent is what we always talk about, the modeling piece. What we model for our children is how they're going to learn how to react, how to feel. So in other words, if, you know, the child falls off the bicycle while they're learning how to ride, if we become overreactive to that and get all excited and, oh my gosh, are you okay? And there's an enormous amount of intensity around the child falling off the bike, that's teaching them that that's a way to react to bad events, stress.
Well, basically, the child's going to end up crying and not be able to get back on the bicycle at that point. On the other hand, if we say, oh, here's a Band-Aid, you know, no big deal, you're fine.
Kiss the boo-boo, let's get back on the bike.
Yeah, give it a kiss and go, and we're very calm about it, the child will be calm. Most of the time children overreact is because they're taking the cues from their parent or somebody else.
Right, if the only way they're ever going to get your attention is when, you know, they're you know, crying and screaming. Well, they'll cry and scream to get the attention.
But if you model, right, a sense of calm, and if it's really just a scratch, it's really just a scratch and it's not a big deal, then they learn to do that. And you really can teach children how to handle not just little situation, but even more significant problems with more of a sense of calm by modeling that for them.
That's a very, very powerful model, is to be able to model calm. And for you to stay calm as a parent, even when things feel a little bit stressful or a little bit out of control, so that everyone else feels like, well, okay, mom or dad are calm or in control. I can be calm and I can be in control. I don't have to feel, you know, like I need to be out of control right now.
I just think one thing that always stuck in my mind is about 25 years ago, there was a bestseller called The House of God, which is about an intern in Beth Israel in Boston. And, you know, they had the 10 rules of the House of God for this intern, this doctor. And the first rule always was, when you get to a code, which means somebody's heart stopped and you have to revive them, the first thing you do is take your own pulse. And really what they're saying is, you got to stay calm if you're going to be successful here. If you want to save somebody else, you first have to learn how to be calm yourself. Okay? If you're, you know, hyperventilating and, you know, your heart is racing and you can't think straight, you're not going to be of any use.
Right. Sometimes it feels like, you know, intuitively it's paradoxical. Like it's a crazy situation. I'm feeling stressed and, you know, you get excited. But really, like, the best way is to take your own pulse first, calm down, and then that's what you're modeling for your family.
And so alongside this is, you don't want to reward anxiety by giving it too much attention, right? You want to empower the child to handle their anxiety. So if I make too big a deal about their anxiety, right, if I focus on it too much, they're going to, unconsciously, that's going to be a reward. They're going to think, oh, well, when I get anxious, you know, mommy really takes care of me.
Right, and then that's actually, you know, unfortunately, a silver lining that people are going to reach for.
Right, and so what you want to do is just be supportive and caring, but in a calm, unexcited, and not overly attentive way. You know, say, you're going to be okay. Don't worry so much about it. You'll be fine. If you want, we could talk about it a little bit. And if you're sort of staying calm about it and not too intense, you know, and you just focus on how they can move forward, not on the anxiety itself, then you really can help your child move away from it without, you know, being focused on anxiety as the end in itself.
Right. I think that's such a good point, because when a child looks distressed, they're distressed, you know, more than not, we want to run in and save them and take care of them. And again, it's counterintuitive. We kind of like back away a little bit and let them learn how to take care of themselves by modeling that and by encouraging them that they're going to be okay.
So I think overall, you know, we really do have an important role in inoculating our children from excessive anxiety by how we deal with stressful events in their life, how we deal with their expression of anxiety, how we respond to it, and how we teach them and model for them how you deal with stress and stressful events and anxiety. And, you know, if we do it right, our children will grow up with less anxiety. And even kids who are naturally more anxious can learn to be calmer and to be less anxious. And I think in the next show, we'll talk more about dealing with more significant anxiety symptoms and how you can really teach your kids more actively dealing with their anxiety. Thank you for tuning in today for Parent is a Verb on ODUradio.org. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact us at parentisaverb, all one word, at OUradio.org. We look forward to seeing you next time.